At SelfState, their focus is on customers first. As a trusted financial partner, they're committed to providing enhanced products and services and banking technology to make your life easier and more convenient. Whatever success looks like to you, they'll make sure you have what you need to take the next step forward. This is banking at its best. This is Banking Forward. In the Atlanta area, please visit Natalia De La Cruz in the Decatur office or Ada Ortiz Maceo in the Marietta Parkway office. SelfState Bank, member FDIC.
You know, that executive says, I'm all on board, but when I go to the boardroom and I'm advocating for you, I need to hear other yeses. So it's important that you network with other leaders, directors, not necessarily just executives, so that they're advocating for you as well. So it's not just a one-on-one, it's a one of many conversations that you have to have and to build that network and for others to also be able to envision how you can be part of that leadership team.
Hola, this is Adela Yelton, and welcome to Latina South Podcast, where we feature inspiring conversations with Latinas who are making things happen in their families, businesses, and communities throughout the South. Today, we welcome Latina Anna Bascarone. Anna's a director in a large utilities company headquartered in Houston, Texas. After 30 years of working, Anna began to feel stuck in her career, so she hired a coach. That move, among others, helped her to land a new position when she began advocating for herself and sharing her story. Let's listen as Anna also talks about her love of golf and its parallels to life. She also talks about her passion for early childhood education as a board member of nonprofit Collaborative for Children. Hola, Anna. Welcome to Latina South. I appreciate you talking with me today.
Hola, Adela. I'm so happy to be meeting with you today. Thank you so much. I'm very grateful for this opportunity.
Tell me more about your Latina identity and what that means to you.
Adela, to me, it means that I have heritage from Mexico. That's where my family came from. And I'm very proud of the opportunity that I have being born in the United States. My mom immigrated from Mexico, Monterrey, exactly. Because of that, I grew up speaking Spanish and I enjoyed all the different Mexican traditions, eating buñuelos and tamales and empanadas and menudo. And so I enjoy all the rich foods. And then also being able to speak a different language and just having, you know, being bilingual is how I identify as a proud Latina.
And you grew up in the north side of Houston, specifically the Aldine area. And tell me a little bit more about your, maybe some of the experiences that you had growing up.
I actually didn't move to the north side of Houston until I started junior high. My first language was Spanish, and so I didn't really learn how to speak English until kindergarten. In fact, right before I started kindergarten, I went to this elementary school that was right there in the Heights area. And again, I didn't learn English until kindergarten, but I remember sitting outside of our little house. It was a duplex, and my cousins and my sister and I, we were sitting outside on the porch, and these kids came by and we didn't understand what they were saying. But what we did end up saying as a result of what they were telling us was doo-doo. And little did I know was that it was my first English word and that it meant poop. And so, and I mean, I still vividly remember that situation, that interaction. And we were just so happy playing and just calling them doo-doo also. But then, you know, started going to kindergarten. They put us in ESL classes. We started learning English, started junior high. And I didn't realize I had a Spanish accent. And the kids that I went to school, the Hispanic kids that we went to school with, because I spoke Spanish and that was my first language, those other kids, Latino kids, did not speak Spanish. And the reason that they were not being taught how to speak Spanish is because their parents intentionally did not teach them Spanish so that they wouldn't have an accent and that they wouldn't be discriminated. So that was my first encounter associated with even understanding what discrimination was or having an accent. I wanted to get rid of my accent. And at the time, the movie Valley Girl came out. And I watched it over and over and over again, Adela, and so much so that I started speaking like a Valley Girl. And so I would go to school and I would, you know, say, oh my God, I'm so sure, you know, just to get rid of that accident. And it, I felt like it helped, but yeah, it was silly. I mean, I wish I would have not done that, but as a young child, you just, you don't understand it and it, you're confused and you do silly things like that, that you now laugh at.
For people growing up, when you're in that phase, your adolescent phase, you're just trying to belong. You're just trying to fit in. So I know you mentioned being in high school and then you went on to college. Well, I'm familiar with the area and I know like the college path can be challenging or was challenging for a lot of us getting beyond high school. How was it challenging for you? What do you remember about the challenges of going from high school to college?
Interestingly enough, I graduated with cum laude honors from high school, but you know, none of the counselors advised me about going to college. So college was actually the last thing on my mind. And my mother's aspiration was to be a secretary. So I thought, how do I become a secretary? And so then I thought, well, maybe I'll go to community college and not just be a secretary, but be a legal secretary. And I started at the community college pursuing a legal secretary certificate. I had to work, but we didn't really have a lot of money. So that was another factor that, you know, I wasn't aware about scholarships. And so in order to make it work, I, you know, started working and going to school at the same time. And I started as a teller. And when I finished the certificate, I realized I don't want to make copies for people and I don't want to make coffee. I just kept going, right? I was already at community college and I just kept going. And I was already working at the current company that I'm at and just kept at it until I got my bachelor's degree. And I was the first one in my family to finish a college degree.
So you were the first.
It took 9 years, but I finished.
When you are the first in a lot of these things, you're having to forge a path and figure it out. What do you think was the thing, right, that kept you forging ahead and figuring out what that next step was? What do you think it was?
It was just being in a professional environment and working with other employees or coworkers that, and I saw that the opportunities that they were getting. And so that certainly inspired me and encouraged me to keep moving up. I'm certainly not someone that just stays idle or stagnant. I continuously like to learn and grow. And again, I was seeing those opportunities come across for other people. And as a minority, I didn't want the doors closed. I wanted to keep moving up. And a lot of the positions that were being posted required a degree. So I knew that that was important if I wanted to, you know, have a better life.
And so fast forward a little bit to now, you have an over 30-year career working in a large corporate environment and just recently have really progressed in your role in leadership and moving forward in a way that maybe you didn't before. Tell me a little bit more about that journey for you.
Yeah, so you're right. You know, earlier this year in January, I was promoted to Director of Energy Solutions and Business Services. And that just means that I'm over a lot of the programs that interface with customers. And that includes energy efficiency, economic development, and key accounts, which is basically our large account management team. It revolves around improving that customer experience and then making it easy for them to work with our company. It was an opportunity that was presented to me at the beginning of the year, but quite honestly, it was like 2 years in the making. Back in 2019, you know, I realized that I wasn't getting those opportunities. My peers were getting, you know, those opportunities. I just, you know, my mom always told me, work really hard and you'll get noticed. And I did. I worked really hard and consistently got great ratings. You know, I started speaking up about wanting to get a different opportunity. Finally, I was presented with an opportunity for a lateral move to become a manager over a new department. you know, I did that for a few years and again, realized that I was ready for the next move, and other peers were getting those opportunities to move to a director level. So I started having a roadshow of meetings with executives at my company, and just was started advocating for myself, telling my story, sharing all the successes that I had done, all my achievements and accomplishments in my past roles and how they were contributing revenue for the company. And just letting those leaders know that I was interested in those opportunities. And then COVID happened and I thought, well, how am I going to continue this roadshow being virtual? And how do I stay relevant? Adela, I just took it upon myself to just invest in myself. One of the things that I started with was taking the Dare to Lead workshop. And Dare to Lead are basically Brené Brown's principles that really focuses on your vulnerabilities, the stories that you tell, having those difficult conversations. She calls them rumbling conversations. Just having a more refined approach on the relationships that I have. You know, at the same time, I was feeling stuck, right? Like I'm not moving. I'm having all these accomplishments professionally, but I just feel like I'm not getting those opportunities. So again, and in addition to taking the workshop, I hired a coach. You know, when I met with my coach, she said, this is not about you getting a promotion. This is about really uncovering who you really are and where you really want to go. We started breaking down the layers, right? Why are you stuck? It's not about, you know, why aren't you advocating? What's holding you back from advocating for yourself?
This episode of Latina South is brought to you by McDonald's, proudly serving communities since 1965. I recently watched a video called Los Viejitos, a TV spot that tells the story of a group of elderly amigos in South Miami who are having fun going to the same McDonald's since 1998. People working there know their orders by heart and appreciate them like familia. McDonald's has become special to this group, just like they've become special to McDonald's. Me encanta.
What did you learn when you uncovered that layer as to why you had not been advocating for yourself?
I learned that it had to do with the way that I was brought up, right? As Hispanics, we're just told work really hard and your work will show for itself, or people will notice you and give you those opportunities. And you tend to just sort of rely on that, and and your humility probably steps in, you know, maybe you're shy or scared of rejection.
I definitely hear you on that, because at least for that generation, our generation, you know, we were taught to keep our head down, you know, do the work, work hard, don't make waves, be grateful. That you learned that that was kind of holding you back. And so you decided to make some shifts, invest in yourself, and really uncover and learn the why. Tell me more about that.
Hearing my mom, you know, constantly telling me to just work really hard, and uncovering that was holding me back, and that I just needed to be able to have the courage to speak up and advocate for myself and not really brag about the accomplishments, you know, but certainly positioning it in a way that resonated with leaders that I would be meeting with to communicate how my success in the past would be contributing to the success in the future. Certainly learned through those discussions that you have to paint the picture. You have to be very intentional and specific about how you can fit in a leader's organization, and, you know, based on your capabilities, how you can help them be successful in their business objectives. Again, through my coach, I was able to tell the story effectively, not knowing, right? Because it's not like you go to college and they give you this roadmap on how to have these conversations, but definitely having those relationships and those and networking across the board will be helpful. And another piece of advice that I got from another executive was that that executive says, I'm all on board, but when I go to the boardroom and I'm advocating for you, I need to hear other yeses. So it's important that you network with other leaders directors, not necessarily just executives, so that they're advocating for you as well. So it's not just a one-on-one, it's a one of many conversations that you have to have and to build that network and for others to also be able to envision how you can be part of that leadership team.
In that large corporate utility organization, there's not a lot of people that look like you. And so you're having to forge your own path, create a network and support structure that works for you, that that other people don't have to, they kind of take that for granted, right? Because they can plug in to something that's already there. Tell me more about what your support structure looks like.
You know, now that I'm in this role, I'm like, okay, this is a whole new space. I have to continue the coaching, right? Because I don't want to get into that situation where I keep hitting a wall and don't know how to break it down. I need that assistance. So I'm continuing to have that relationship. And then I have a lot of women, friends who are very successful in their own right. And I lean on them for a lot of advice. And, you know, we all have our down days, discouraging days, but we're there to continue to support each other, be there to hear each other out. So I think that's important to have a core group of women to be there as your mentors, as your friends, and your support team, your cheerleading team.
Tell me a little bit more about your self-care routine. What does that look like?
So I always have time for me. You know, I have a husband, a wonderful husband. I have 2 5-year-old boys. They're twin boys. And I have an older son who's 21, about to graduate from college. I always make time for myself, whether it's just to go pamper myself. My favorite pastime is playing golf. And so I, you know, certainly take time to go do that. Some of my girlfriends play it as well. But I also joined this Women on Course organization that is designed for women who like to play golf. And they'll arrange some play dates for us to go and meet up. And I get to meet new women there too that are from the Houston area. So
it's interesting to me to hear you have an interest in golf. And the only reason why I say that is because what is your perception around Latinas that play golf? Do you think that's a growing number? And what do you like about golf as a sport?
Yeah, you know, when I started playing golf, it was more around, it was about work, right? And being invited to go out to those external events and network with customers. But then I, you know, after taking a few lessons, I really enjoyed it. And I just like being out there. And you know, there's a perception that it's hard, that you have to be good. And that's not true. In fact, I went to a seminar a few years ago and there was the speaker, Denise Hamilton. She's the founder of Watch Your Work. She talked about how, you know, golf can seem intimidated, but when you really go get out there, you realize that guys suck, right? Like they're not that good. And that's so true. Like I'm even better than some of the guys that go out there and I really don't play that well. And so, but I'm like, as long as you hit it straight and as long as it's in the fairway and you just keep at it, you know, I'm a bogey player, but you know, golf, it reminds me of life because some days are really good and some days are awful when you go out there and then some shots are good, some are not. And that's just life, right? But you keep at it. Your goal is to get that ball in that hole. It's not going to be perfect getting there. But as long as your goal is to get in that hole or in life to accomplish that goal, no matter what happens with kind of distractions and obstacles that we have, you're going to make it, right? And that's what I appreciate about golf. It's just, you know, some hits are really good, perfect, and some are awful. And I don't know why I'm out here, but then it's those good days that keep you at it. You know, you just want to keep getting better. And even then, back to the coaching situation, at least once a year, go take a lesson, right, to get tweaked on getting a little bit better at golf. So even then, I don't stay stagnant. I continue to learn and get coached on how to get better at it. And the same thing with my professional career. I go out there and have fun, and it's a game against myself and getting better. I'm trying not to compare myself to other people. I just want to enjoy it.
Let's switch a little bit. I know that you have young children, and you mentioned to me that you have an interest in early childhood education. Tell me more about that and the nonprofit that you're involved in.
A few years ago, I was approached by a colleague who was on the board of Collaborative for Children. And it happened to be right after the twins were born. And he said, I want to nominate you to join this board, Collaborative for Children, because it's focused on early childhood education. And you just had your babies and you'll be in this space. And so you'll have a good perspective to bring to the table. And so I asked him to go ahead and nominate me, and it's been a joy to be on the Collaborative for Children's board. The reason why I love it so much and I have a great passion for it is because I understand that having that early childhood exposure to a good curriculum, you know, learning the ABCs, getting read to, learning the colors, everything to get pre-K ready or kindergarten ready is so important for those children. Not to mention that they're like little sponges, right? And so the more they're learned, the more ready that they'll be for kindergarten. So Collaborative for Children works for daycares in the inner cities. So they'll go in and train the staff, the teachers, the directors in those daycare centers. They go in there, get them trained to teach a high quality curriculum. And then they also have a parent component. So they teach the parents on how to continue that education at home, right? Whether it's reading to them, whether it's playing games, and how to have that interaction so that the children are learning a bigger vocabulary by hearing these stories and, of course, continuing to learn their ABCs. The coolest thing that's about to happen is that we also recognize that some families just can't afford daycare, right? So how do you better give them access to some form of early childhood education? Well, they're going to be rolling out a mobile learning lab and going into these communities to allow those families to come into these buses and get exposure to that curriculum. Most low-income families, they have a family member that just watches the child, right? That's just how it is. And in order to access those families, these buses will be able to do that.
Well, thank you for sharing that. And we'll include a link to that organization in our show notes. I know you're really passionate about it. Thank you, Anna, for sharing your story with us on Latina South. I appreciate you being here.
Adela, thank you so much for the opportunity. It was my pleasure to share my story. And I appreciate all the great work that you're doing for us in getting our stories out there. So thank you so much.
You're welcome. And let's stay connected.
Take Absolutely.
Care. Thank you for joining us on Latina South Podcast. If you'd like to hear someone be interviewed on a future episode, please nominate them by dropping us a line at hola@latinasouth.com. Thank you, and hasta la próxima. See y'all.